From the Middle East with Cash.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Big U.S. banks like Citigroup are short on capital. They've lost billions of dollars on bad mortgage investments. Now, who might have a pile of money lying around looking for a home? Oil-rich countries in the Gulf, that's who. Citigroup says the Arab Emirate Abu Dhabi is taking a 5% stake in the bank for $7.5 billion. Abu Dhabi will become Citigroup's largest shareholder. That could raise some red flags about foreign influence, but Peter Thal Larson of the Financial Times says this is strictly an investment and nothing more.
Abu Dhabi will have no board representation or any direct influence over Citigroup. And really, people seem to be sort of going to quite a long length to structure this in such a way to say this is purely a financial transaction and we're not buying any kind of influence over these banks or financial companies.
But it is a vote of confidence in Citigroup. The bank could use it. Its shares have plunged 42% the last 5 months. We'll get a reading on U.S. consumer confidence this morning. It's a monthly survey from the Conference Board, and it could be down for the fourth straight month. More from Jeremy Hobson.
Today's report will be the result of interviews with 5,000 households, and it's views like this one from Steve Glorioso in downtown Washington, D.C., that analysts are afraid of.
How confident are you right now in the state of the economy?
Not very. I personally am not in any economic danger, but it just seems that everything is going in the wrong direction.
But will that lack of confidence mean less spending? I asked consumer expert Scott Hoyt at moodyseconomy.com.
It can, but it doesn't always.
In this case, University of Maryland business professor Peter Morici says consumers will pull back. He says high gas prices, falling home prices, and a volatile stock market are scaring them.
People are pretty good at sensing when things are slowing down. Now, just because we have falling confidence does not mean we're going to have a recession, but it's one of those indicators that gives us pause.
In Washington, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Investor confidence might be even worse than consumer confidence. The Dow is a 200-point drop from its worst month ever. The S&P 500 has lost 9% in November, its worst month in 5 years. The Dow starts the morning at 12,743. It fell 237 points yesterday. The S&P 500 lost 33, and the NASDAQ dropped 55 points. Asian stocks were mostly lower today. European shares are down close to 1% so far. There's a public meeting in Washington today about fish, specifically whether certain fish can be labeled organic. Nancy Marshall Genzer reports.
The National Organic Standards Board will be looking into whether farm-raised fish that are fed ground-up wild fish can be labeled organic. Urvashi Rangan of Consumers Union says no because of what's in the wild fish.
It can contain mercury and PCBs. That will then contaminate the fish that feed on it.
Kona Blue Water Fish Farms President Neil Anthony Sims says he should be allowed to cash in on the organic food wave. His fish do eat ground-up wild fish, but 50% of their diet comes from agricultural products. Sims would love to make them vegetarians, but that would take expensive research, and he wants an incentive.
And that incentive is organic labeling. That is the market driver.
One thing everyone agrees on, fish that are natural vegetarians, like tilapia, can be labeled organic. Environmentalists say carnivores are a different kettle of fish. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Tuesday, November 27th on Marketplace.org. The Federal Communications Commission is supposed to vote today on stricter regulations for cable TV. The Wall Street Journal says that vote might be delayed. There's some internal squabbling at the FCC, and the White House doesn't like what the agency is doing with this. John Dimsdale explains what's at stake here.
In the 1980s, Congress decided once TV cables reached 70% of the nation's households, and if 70% of them chose cable, it was time to trim the industry sails. The Media Access Project's Andrew Schwartzman says companies breached that threshold several years ago.
It's long past time when the FCC should be cracking down on cable ownership, diversity of programming, and making the cable industry more responsive.
The FCC chairman agrees and is calling on other commissioners to vote to pull the so-called 70-70 trigger. But once that happens, the National Cable and Telecommunications Association's Kyle McSlarrow worries the FCC will impose price controls.
The last time the FCC regulated prices, it was devastating to consumers because it just stopped investment in innovation cold.
Consumers may pay less, but get less programming, he says. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Last year, there was some concern about New York losing its place as the world's preeminent financial center. London was getting more international IPOs. But things seem to be looking up for the Big Apple. Ashley Milne-Tite reports.
So far this year, initial public offerings on the New York Stock Exchange and the Nasdaq have raised more than $51 billion. IPOs on London exchanges have raked in around $46 billion. Robert Teitelman is editor of The Deal. He says a number of particularly large companies debuted on the New York exchanges this year, including private equity group Blackstone. But he says IPOs alone aren't a good gauge of a city's financial importance, and enough of all the rivalry talk.
To me, there's no competition necessarily between London and New York. They're very complementary financial capitals, and they're dominant.
At least for now.
There's a huge amount of money coming out of China, India, the Gulf states. You have many of these places trying to develop indigenous exchanges.
He says these players could have a far greater effect on New York and London's global financial dominance than either city could have on the other. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
We'll stay in New York for a bit longer. As you know, foreclosure filings are on the rise across the country. And even though New York City is still a hot real estate market, the foreclosures are up there, too. From member station WNYC, Lisa Chow reports on whether this is a buying opportunity.
Foreclosed homes go up on the auction block almost every day in New York. Courtrooms holding the auctions are packed with investors, bank representatives, and lawyers. The homeowners show up sometimes. Their curious neighbors do too. Elias Molzak used to buy houses at the auctions in the hope of selling them at a profit. He says the auctions have become more of a spectacle than a place to buy bargain properties.
Most of the properties are overpriced right now. The prices are too high. They are market values. There are no deals.
Molzak says the banks base their prices on what's still owed on the mortgage. But over the last few years, homeowners have squeezed all the equity out of their properties, so the bank's prices are almost as high as the regular market rates. Lisa Urban is a real estate lawyer. She says lenders don't want to lose a cent.
They want to get the mortgage money out of the foreclosure, so they're not going to be letting the properties go. At least they're not at this point letting the properties go for less than what the mortgage amount is.
When properties don't sell at auction, they revert back to the banks. Regular auction watchers say that happens about 90% of the time these days. Because New York's housing market still looks buoyant, banks are cleaning up the foreclosed properties and listing them for sale on the open market. But they don't really want to be in the business of selling homes. It's expensive and time-consuming. Michael Gregg owns and rents out 35 apartments. He bought most of them at foreclosure auctions in the 1990s. He believes foreclosure rates will keep rising, and that means auction prices will eventually fall.
I've been waiting about 6-7 years now for this day to happen. I can see the writing on the wall. This is exactly how it was in the late 80s when they had the debacle of the savings and loans. That's how I got my first co-op.
It looks as though the foreclosure trend is going Greg's way. Third quarter foreclosures were up nearly 40% in the city from the same period a year ago. In New York, I'm Lisa Chow for Marketplace.
There's an international forum on food safety today. Guess where it is? Beijing. China desperately wants to convince the world that its food is safe to eat. The Chinese government has started a massive campaign to inspect the food industry. We got a peek at how those inspections work. Scott Tong has more from Shanghai.
Mr. Peng and Mr. Zhao are food safety inspectors. They roam Shanghai in a mobile testing unit. It's a long van with a lab in the back. First stop, a supermarket run by the German chain Metro. The testers grab packs of cabbage, then it's back to the van for testing. Marketplace researcher Linda Lin watches as the men drip chemicals to test the food. The result? No pesticide on the veggies. Our inspectors proclaim similar success at their next stop, an indoor farmer's market. Linda Lin asks if the tests are random. The inspectors ignore her. They'd also like to ignore this old man. He has his own questions.
I wonder if there's hydrogen peroxide in our food. How will we ever know?
Sean Ryan of China Market Research says for many, food quality is the top concern.
If the government doesn't crack down and ensure supply chain, you're going to have a lot of social unrest and a lot of social instability.
China has 500,000 food processors, and the new rules for checking and finding all of them are still in the works. And, says industry consultant Grover Niemeyer of Ecolab, the core problem is something most people never think about, China's water.
That polluted water, with anything from industrial pollutions to human waste, is finding its way into the food chain. Also comes out the faucet.
On a scale of 1 to 10, market researcher Sean Ryan gives China a 6. Having said that,
I think it's definitely gotten better. When I first moved to China in the mid-90s, I would have given it a 2 or a 3.
How long till China hits 10? Independent experts think 5 to 10 years at least. Until then, the government will keep sending out the food police, maintaining the situation is under control. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.